News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, moving closer to 8.07 on your Monday morning. Weather-wise, rain's pretty much gone and clouds will remain. And that's pretty much it right through the week. And we'll get some rain when we get closer to the weekend, Friday and Saturday. Otherwise, hopefully it's a good drive to work and school today. Everything's back with it here on the 13th of January.
Yeah, and plenty to get into this hour. And you could join us, 251-343-0106, as there's plenty of international news, national news with everything that's going on in D.C., and then, of course, the local stuff that we're talking about, which this morning included, I guess, our first true entrant, and I'm not even sure, I guess it hasn't really been confirmed, but to the Alabama gubernatorial race. Had Dan this morning had the story that Admiral Kent Davis, the former head of the VA, very interested in jumping into the gubernatorial race, and his name has been mentioned along with Rick Pate, the ag commissioner, who has not officially jumped in yet, Lieutenant Governor Will Ainsworth, and then a name that's becoming louder and louder as you discuss the position of governor is Tommy Tuberville, whether he decides to end his run as senator and look to be the governor of the state of Alabama.
And I'm sure that you saw this in Lanyap, too, a very extensive story about Lanyap receiving kind of a snapshot of Governor Kay Ivey's agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And then they could examine it and see if she's working herself down to the nub or not. And it seems like, well,
her schedule looks a lot like mine.
A lot lighter.
Except if she's... I start the day earlier than she does, mm-hmm. I would imagine. But mm-hmm. Yeah, this story that Dale Leash dug into at Lanyap requested Ivy's schedule from her office. They sent it over, and what they found was most days, at least according to her official schedule, she doesn't work much past 2-3 p.m.
August 14th through November the 14th. I'm surprised that they got this information from the governor's office.
They usually don't send stuff out very willingly,
well,
right? Or at least we haven't
right.
seen.
Right, so it was requested, and they got it. And when they looked it over, I haven't read the entire story, but what I read was pretty much that there's a lot of dead space, a lot of days and hours where she's really not on the job in a very forceful way. Let's mm-hmm. just put it like that. And so, what is she doing with her time?
They say not a whole lot, right? And that time frame, August 14th to November 14th, Dale said there were plenty of days that were completely blocked out, so they did not include those. But of the 53 days they looked at on her schedule, 36 of those 53 days ended at or before 3 p.m. Now, her press secretary, Gina Miola, responded to Dale for this story and said, as you know, on any given day, Governor Ivey is involved in meetings, phone calls, or other activities that for various reasons do not appear on her official calendar.
I could see that.
So she's more or less saying that, oh, we have plenty of things we're doing. She has plenty of things she's doing, but we don't always add them if we're in the act of doing it. It's kind of what it sounds like to me, which if you run a calendar, a personal calendar, you might run things kind of similarly, which is what I've been known to do. But this is the governor's office. They need to be on top of these things for reference, just keeping receipts, basically, right?
Yep.
She said, although our office has provided you with all responsive records in its possession, we have not attempted to create updated calendar entries for all of the governor's various day-to-day activities. But I will say that specific time frame, August 14th to November 14th, you had the presidential campaign ongoing. Seemed like really the only thing you heard from politicians was how they felt about the upcoming election. So I don't know if like most governors had a lighter load during that time frame or not. But
well, for this governor, that was in the middle, maybe not the middle, but part of the Davis saga.
Yeah,
that was part of that time.
Probably made a pretty good chunk of it, actually.
You would think. So I think it all began back in the spring, and then by August of this past year, I think it was boiling over a little bit. I forget exactly the timeline and all of that. Let me just throw, I'm going to throw this to the audience, 251-343-0106. Could you be governor of the state of Alabama. I had a conversation over the weekend, just kind of a dinner conversation, just shooting the bull, you know. And it was like, I think a lot of the decisions are already made for the governor. She just kind of follows the script. Somebody was saying that at the table. I was thinking, maybe that's true. Powers that be, the main mules in the state, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the answer's already in the test. Just check it and move on.
Right. Just do this.
Just do this.
Yeah.
And when you're thinking about it, it's almost like maybe it'd be easier to be governor of the state of Alabama than mayor of Fairhope or whatever. I mean, I'm not saying necessarily that that's what I believe, but when we had the conversation, it kind of came up. And then you look at this story. I think the story is what prompted the conversation, by the way. You look at this story and you're like, yeah, the answers are already on the test. It's just a matter of filling out. And now you have emergencies that come up. The governor would be responsible for all of that. But for the most part, what is there to do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. Because we know just by looking at current stories from other states that getting the title is one thing, but actually performing in the role you've been elected to is another. And your ability to do either, it isn't dependent on the other, right? So
right.
To become the mayor of LA or the governor of California, it's a very difficult undertaking because you have to please the right people that have the right amount of money. You have to have the right kind of aura about you as far as going out and campaigning.
You have to have the proper amount of hair gel.
You have to have the right amount of hair gel. You have to know the right kind of people outside of the United States so you can travel to inaugurations and things like that.
Yeah.
But really, you don't have to be a good mayor or a good governor to get elected to that role. It's a completely different resume that you need to check in order to attain that position.
Yep.
And so we really often don't find out how good of a governor or mayor someone is
or
how bad they are until they're put to the test.
Yeah.
And I think Ivy has passed tests over the years.
Yeah.
I think she's failed some tests as well. But could she pass a test right now? If we were hammered by some Mother Nature event, whether it's a hurricane or a bunch of tornadoes or maybe one of these earthquakes becomes much more of a problem mm-hmm. than what we've seen, can Governor Ivy at her age now be the leader that Alabama needs? And I think that's what everything is driving at. That's the question. Are we better off with Ivy in her current state as governor, or does she need to pass the keys on to Ainsworth or someone else? And really, there's no way to know because we don't get that information from her office.
So a lot of people have known her for a long time. These relationships going back 30, 40 years. Tripp Pittman was on Jeff's show last week, and he was kind of soft-pedaling. He didn't really he likes her. He knows he's known her for a long time.
I thought he defended her.
He kind of defended her. And he also said something that was very important, talking about the circle of people around her, which at this point maybe having a greater influence on decisions day-to-day that are being made. Is that fair?
I think it's certainly a possibility. A lot of people would tell you for sure that's what's happening.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, just out there on the text line, what do you think? And I'm not trying to be malicious here or even flippant or whatever, but, we talked about it last couple of weeks, and then, bam, Lanyap's got a long story about the governor and her schedule.
I did think some of the response that Dale got within that story, and you need to read this if you're interested in this kind of thing at lanyapmobile.com. Dale Leash with great work per usual. But he got response from State Senator Chris Elliott, who, of course, was on Jeff Poor's show on Friday, but this was before responding to this. He said, I think the data speaks for itself without any further comment from me on it. It is what it is. I don't think it will surprise anyone. That was his response to her light schedule that Lanyap was able to obtain. But then you have a Democrat, and I would say one of the most outspoken, if not the most outspoken Democrat in the Alabama legislature, Wandalyn Gavan,
mm-hmm.
who's, according to Dale's story, said believes that if Ivy were not in the state's majority party, the issue with her age and ability would be a bigger deal. That sounds like what DeSantis was saying about the mismanagement in California,
mm-hmm.
where he said if that was a Republican, we'd be looking at an entirely different point of view from the media, right? Well, Gavan says kind of the same thing with Ivy. If she were a Democrat in office, that things would be different. If she were the governor of the Democrat Party, quote, there would be eyebrows raised and questions raised about her acuity. And if she's actually doing the job, I think they're fair questions. But she also complimented Ivy, said she's one of the best speakers she's ever met. said she's an older lady, an older governor, but when she's present, she's on point. That's what Gavan is saying here, Representative Gavan.
She's an attorney, too, isn't she?
I believe so, yeah. Said Ivey's popularity as governor and ability to stick to the Republican playbook has made her successful and prevented more serious questions about her health. Even though she, Ivey is, quote, an older woman who looks frail from time to time, she said, whatever they're doing is working for them. So your thoughts on Governor Ivey's schedule and whether a deeper look needs to be taken into her ability to lead the state?
Yeah, and again, I don't want to make it sound like we're piling on. We're just following up on a story. Lagniappe followed up on our story in a way, is that we were talking about this, and I'm not saying it worked that way, but Dale then gets this, you know, this opportunity to examine her schedule, which we didn't have, and they examined it, and they came up with their own. In a way, they kind of said, you can draw your own conclusions.
Right. As I read that. Also, something I want to get to this hour, another one of our three big things was about these bollards that they want to put in. The city is looking at purchasing 18 of these portable bollards from this company. The name of them, Delta Scientific Corporation. And it's no secret the reason why this is coming up now is because of the New Year's Day terrorist attack in New Orleans. And did they? I don't know if I ever saw a finality to that story. At first, they were saying the bollards that were supposed to be there had been removed because they were being repaired to be deployed for the Super Bowl.
Yeah, for whatever reason.
But then I think I read that they had never really been out there and that they were preparing to put them in for the first time. So I'm not sure how that, why that happened the way it did in New Orleans, but city like Mobile, which has a lot in common with New Orleans as far as Mardi Gras and having so many events in very similar downtowns, are looking at maybe purchasing these bollards. And they have 18 that they're looking at buying at just over $167,000. We'll get to some of the audio that Darwin Singleton got in his interview with the president of this Delta Scientific Corporation who would be providing these bollards and how he says they work. But there are some questions on the text line I'm seeing you have about, is 18 enough? And where exactly do you put these to keep it as safe as possible during these downtown events?
I don't really know what the plan is with the bollards, and it can be explained to me. I'm happy to take that information in, but in New Orleans, obviously it was in and around the French Quarter in Bourbon Street, which are, at times, there's no traffic on those streets, correct?
Right.
So you have the bollards there to prevent any cars. And
turning onto that street.
I just ran into it over the weekend. I was going to meet Joseph for a beer at Braided River Saturday. And there was a police presence right at Braided River, but they were blocking off the block. They were having kind of an outdoor music event. And you simply had a cop car there, you know, that was the bollard, I guess is what I'm saying.
Right.
And of course, it's temporary because the event's there. And for instance, one on Dolphin Street, if you're going to have part of Dolphin Street closed for Art Walk or whatever, it's not a permanent thing. It's,
right.
You're using a cop car in place of what would be a bollard.
Which is why they're looking at these portable bollards that can be moved, and you would need a truck and I guess a particular crane or something that goes with that in order to move them around. We'll get into that more. I thought some of the audio that president of the corporation, how he explained these work, was pretty fascinating.
I did too. I don't know exactly how it's going to work or how these things are going to spring up in downtown Mobile and what they're going to look like and where they're going to be exactly.
Well, you don't want to find out by running into them, I'll tell you that much.
Not from his audio.
No.
It does everything but eat your car, he was describing. It is 820 with Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. If you want to call, you can do that too. 251-343-0106. Also our text line, of course.
A24 here, FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Coming to the text line here in just a moment, 251-343-0106. This segment, we're talking about CASA Mobile. CASA, an acronym, it stands for the Court-Appointed Special Advocates, and they do their work here in Mobile County, transforming the lives of children and youth who get caught up in the child welfare system. It's a local nonprofit, and their goal, their mission, as it were, is to provide one consistent and caring volunteer who's been trained to advocate for each child's best interest. Right now, CASA Mobile urgently needs more volunteers to reach their goal of serving every abused and neglected child in Mobile County. They're looking for someone who will address that child's right to a safe, loving, and permanent home. And volunteer training starts here in just a couple weeks. It's January 27th, that first class, where you can learn how to help out a neglected child. And they have these classes from 5:30 to 8:30 in the evening to try to not interfere with your work day. It looks like about six classes that begin January 27th. And for people who want to help Casa Mobile but are not able to commit to volunteering, you can find out more information and even donate there at Casa, C-A-S-A, CasaMobile.org.
All right, to the text line, 251-343-0106.
Yeah, Pete says, Governor Meemaw is our Biden. The question is, who is really running that office? Backstrap.
I don't think it'd be hard to figure it out. I mean, you've got, you know, an alignment of five, six, seven people around her that, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you look at the roster, it probably wouldn't be that hard to pick people that might be making moves there. Backstrap Stacker says, Granny says nap time is 3 p.m. sharp right after she catches up on Days of Our Lives and old Golden Girls reruns. So about these bollards, that was one of our big stories this morning, and the city of Mobile looking at purchasing 18 of these, and they would also need to purchase a truck and certain tools that would be needed to remove and relocate the barricades, because so this would not be permanent, right? Mm-hmm. They make them so that they're permanent, but these would be portable so they can move them in and out, because you need to ride Dauphin Street sometimes. You need to be able to drive your vehicle through there.
Right.
This would cost just over $167,000 and comes on the heels of the New Orleans terror attack, where some ballers definitely would have come in handy. Darwin Singleton with NBC 15 spoke with the president of this company that the city of Mobile is looking at purchasing 18 of these portable bollards from. He explained what happens to a vehicle when it runs into one of them.
When you hit the center unit or one of the units, the others can wrap around that vehicle, and there's a little bit of chaos there, but they drag and they tumble and they wedge into the asphalt or concrete, and again, absorb that energy from the vehicle while wedging between the concrete ground and the vehicle itself, disabling that vehicle.
Yeah, so a couple things. I mean, it obviously does it quite a bit of damage to the vehicle that hits it, but it sounds like, he said it wedges into the ground. It sounds like with these portable bollards, if they're hit, could cause quite a bit of damage to the roadway, is what I'm hearing. He also said they have these sidewalk units, so I don't know if that's the ones that the city of Mobile is looking at purchasing. They say 18 portable bollards. I have a feeling they're talking about these.
These smaller units you can put on the sidewalks, where you can still allow people through, but the way these are designed, they're small enough to fit in that gap like we saw the driver drive through in New Orleans between the barricade they had and the wall of the building on the sidewalk. And these units would completely eliminate that risk.
Yeah, and Backstrap Stacker texting about that as well said, doesn't 18 bollards seem like a small number? Why not do it right and install the hardware in the ground so we can really block off what's needed? There, I mean, you just look at your standard Mardi Gras parade downtown, and I'm looking at Route A at MobileMask.com. I mean, you start right there on Claiborne Street, right near the Civic Center. I'm not sure. I can't remember how much the route will change because of the work being done at the Civic Center. But you basically start right there, hang east on Church Street, and there's at least, let's see, two different roadways there that cross over Church Street that you'd have to make sure. I think that's Jackson and Joachim. So you'd have to – that's two roads right there coming onto Church Street, both sides of it, too. Then you hit Royal, and just on your way up Royal, I mean, you're looking at Government, you're looking at Dauphin, so that's – less than a fourth of the way through the parade. You hang a left on St. Francis and then south on Conception, where you hit those same roadways that you'd have to block off for the parade on Royal. I mean, we see it every year with the barricades. So which intersections would receive barricades only? Which ones would they put these bollards on? I would have a feeling that they'd have a focus specifically on Dauphin Street with those. But is 18 enough? And how can your standard old barricades, how do those perform when a vehicle runs into
them? They don't perform like this. Watch this bollard against a truck right here. And
oh, boy. That'll do some damage.
Yeah.
It'll stop whatever's trying to make it through.
Don't run your truck into a bollard. We'll just say that. It's 8:30 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. I think it would be worth your while to go to YouTube and Look at the video when bollards attack. So
it's like your new favorite genre of video.
It is. Watch this all day. So like these bollards in certain cities.
They're like pokey bollards.
They're like whack-a-moles. I mean, they go back into the, like a bus.
They're like the moles in whack-a-mole.
Yeah, exactly. A bus came up on a couple of bollards, and evidently it senses the bus. The bus has got the remote, and down they go.
Mm-hmm.
And the bus crosses through the intersection, and then you see these cars that are behind the bus, and they think, I'm going to do the same thing.
Yeah, it's free and clear.
The bollards reemerge mm-hmm. as people are driving, trying to drive past them, and that's not working out for anybody's car that I've seen so far. So we'll have to see if these. And we've got a text about the bollards, too, from Josh Woods.
Yeah, just send in a picture of what they're voting on, and that would certainly stop a vehicle that tries to make it through, and highly visible, too, with the bright orange. And you could see where this could be probably moved. I mean, they are portable, the ones they're voting on, so they would be able to move these in and out depending on where they're needed. But the question is, and I know that they've been pondering this and we'll continue to talk about it at the council before going through with the decision, but I'm just more, I guess, interested in how they plan to utilize them. You think of just your standard Route A Mardi Gras parade and how many different roadways you encounter during that one parade, and then how quickly, many of them need to be useful again right after, as the city heads back to wherever they came from, right? As you head back out. And that's why those barricades are so easy to move. I mean, there's plenty of times where I ended up on the inside of the parade on accident.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're like, well, I'd like to leave, but now I can't.
Yeah.
So then you have to wait for the barricades to move. I'm sure that they would continue to utilize those, but there is a lot of road and a lot of intersections that they would have to protect you from if you're going to put these bollards. And I love this text too, because Dan and I have been talking about this also over the last week and a half. Mike and Daphne said, guys, I'm 55 and have never heard the word bollard in my life.
Me too.
I've now heard it 55 times in the last segment. Enjoy the show. Yeah, I didn't know if it was ballard or bollard or how, when you use the word barricade compared to something like that. But yeah, bollard has become a popular word over the last.
Yeah, ballard. Ballad would be a slow song from James Ingram, I think.
That's ballad.
Ballad, okay.
Yeah, ballard.
So ballard, I don't know. But bollard, yeah, I'm the same way. I've never heard of the term until the news came down out of New Orleans on New Year's Eve. So, I don't know. It's a technical term that means something very specific, but to watch some of these videos.
You should watch the video. It's awesome. You know, as a youth who liked to try to show off my athleticism, whenever I'd come upon a Walmart bollard or wherever you go in, you try to jump over them, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes you don't make it high enough.
No, you don't.
And that's what that video reminded me of some of those vehicles who end up right on top of them.
Yeah.
It creates a lot of damage.
And how about the big semi that is like going right at a bollard, kind of a test to see if the bollard
can handle it,
stands up to it, and man, oh man, they just destroyed that
completely
truck.
Flip it, yeah. Let's see, Don says, you know, that's a lot of money. However, you can't put a dollar sign next to an innocent life. I have to wonder, though, are they reusable? Yeah, there's 18 of them. They're portable. They'd be able to move them around. And part of that cost, which they said the contract that they're currently looking at would be just over $167,000. You're looking at a truck and also the tools that would be needed to move them around. So once you have that, and I imagine that's a pretty good portion of the cost there, then the more bollards you purchase, you already have the truck, right?
Mm-hmm. And you've got, I guess, you know, Mobile's going to have its own bollard crew that are going to have to be, they're going to have to kind of go to bollard school.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure they're very capable. They can take somebody from some
just take your best barricaders.
I think there's more skill here. There's more skill involved okay. in the bollard. So anyway, I guess you just learn how to do it, and you're able to become a bollard
in training.
A bollard installer. And so, you know, we'll see. But
I'm gonna give that a shot.
Those
too.
Videos on how strong these bollards are. Pretty interesting. If you just go to YouTube and just go to bollards, I think you'll see what I'm talking about.
A couple texts here, and then we'll move on. Gardner says, shouldn't there be a competitive bid process? Sounds pretty expensive per bollard. Will the purchaser get a finder's fee? How many bollards will it take to block one entrance? And it's a lot of questions. Hopefully they're able to met that out during the city council meeting this week and next week. And Terry said these portable barriers are good for lighter vehicles, but require a lot of preventative maintenance. If you don't, they tend to break down and don't work when you need them. And Backstrap Stacker, how much is a life worth to the city of Mobile? Seems like it's $8,900 a bollard. Keep the text coming, 251-343-0106. Thought this was notable also, an interview that came up Friday. Joe Rogan, and not for the first time, but had Mark Zuckerberg, the... Do we have to explain who Mark Zuckerberg is every time we talk about
him? I don't think so. We can't explain the evolution, and I guess that was the heart of the conversation with Rogan. You know, the evolution of his thinking and him now coming out. It was about a month or two ago that he kind of eased out that he was having, you know, certain thoughts on the restrictions that the government had on him.
Yeah.
And now he came out with more of a proclamation in the last week or so, like, here's what happened to me and here's what I'm going to do going forward with Meta.
Yeah, so to kind of timeline it for you, and you did a good job there, but Zuckerberg, we started seeing him seriously get involved, and it may have been even prior to that, but the 2020 elections where he dumped $400 million into various voting municipalities, mm-hmm. and it seemed like it was just a massive work for the Democrat Party, and that he was able to go around federal election laws in order to basically fund a lot of votes to come in that probably went towards Biden. And he's been catching all kinds of hell for that. But during COVID, when we had this entire, you know, the federal government trying to shut down any talk on social media that's contrary to what they were pushing as far as the virus or the vaccine or who started it or who's trying to fix it. I mean, we all remember what those times were like. And it seemed, and you look at the some of the reports that have come from that time, that Jack Dorsey and Twitter were kind of pushing back a little bit, but also pretty quickly willing to get on board with what the feds asked them to do.
Yeah.
Facebook, I don't know if there was really that much ever of a question. It seemed to me, at least from the outside looking in, that they were ready to do whatever was asked of them from the Biden administration, shut down any kind of conversation that was opposite of what the Biden administration wanted out there. And Zuckerberg seemed complicit, and yeah. I think definitely was. Now he's trying to change that narrative. And we saw before the November, this most recent election, where he said, you know, I'm not getting involved one way or the other this time.
I guess that's where I heard the first quote on all of that.
He said, I'm not dumping money into this like I did last time. We're just going to let the cards fall where they may. And now you've had Bezos, you've had Tim Cook, you've had all of the tech bigwigs, the leader of Google. They've all been and made their way down to Mar-a-Lago to try to make nice with Trump and really try to put their company in the best position to succeed, because they're looking at massive overregulation in Europe as they continue to push back against these social media companies. They're going into homes and arresting people for just posts online.
I know.
Where they're critical of things.
It's amazing.
And I think in one way, these tech companies realize they've stepped in it with the horse they've backed over the last 10 or 15 years in the Democrat Party and the liberal parties around the world. But also they see who's coming into charge now, and they know the kinds of things they've done in the past and said about Trump and how they've really turned the system against him to try to shut him down. And now they want to play nice, and you have Zuckerberg on Rogan, and I mean, believe him if you want. I guess I believe him, but you have to kind of ask what his end goal is here now, going after the Biden administration the way that he is.
Okay, going to play that. I just want to say, and also don't discount the fact that he made all these donations for the Biden to win. The COVID thing, yes, but remember the role that Facebook played right at the election itself with the Hunter Biden laptop. And all of that, and they discounted all of that.
Yeah,
and that, they went with the government's version of things as fact.
You're right. How could I go without even mentioning the Hunter Biden laptop story?
Absolutely crucial.
And that was Twitter specifically in the crosshairs in that story, but Facebook played a part of that too. They weren't sharing that New York Post article on Facebook, even though the fight really came down to whether Twitter was going to lift the ban that they had on the Post. And who knows if we're talking about any of this or if Trump is even in office or getting ready to get into office, if Elon Musk doesn't end up purchasing Twitter and allowing... just look at Facebook's new plan is to do community-sourced responses to posts to determine whether they're factual or not. Here's Zuckerberg talking on the Joe Rogan show about the Biden administration coming for them. And since this is Rogan, I've listened, I think, three or four times to make sure there's no cuss words. So hopefully this is clean. But Zuckerberg on Biden coming for them.
These people from the Biden administration would call up our team and, like, scream at them and curse. And it's like these documents are, it's all kind of out there.
Oh, did and you record any of those phone calls?
I don't think we've, but I think I want to listen. I mean, there are emails. the emails are published. It's all kind of out there. And they're like, and basically it just got to this point where we were like, no, we're not gonna take down things that are true. That's ridiculous. They wanted us to take down this meme of Leonardo DiCaprio looking at a TV talking about how 10 years from now or something, you know, you're going to see an ad that says, okay, if you took a COVID vaccine, you're eligible for, for this kind of payment, like this sort of like class action lawsuit type meme. And they're like, no, you have to take that down. And we just said, no, we're not going to take down humor and satire. We're not going to take down things that are true. And then at some point, I don't know, it flipped a bit. I mean, Biden, when he gave some statement at some point, I don't know if it was a press conference or to some journalists, where he basically was like, these guys are killing people. And I don't know, then like all these different agencies and branches of government basically just like started investigating, coming after our company. It was brutal. Brutal.
Wow.
So there he's the victim.
He's absolutely the victim.
He said they came after us, and then when I pushed back, they just kept coming, and then they started investigating my companies. Like, he makes himself sound like Elon Musk, kind of, right? He's trying to paint himself in that kind of veil when it's certainly not what things have looked like from the outside when you look at the life of Mark Zuckerberg. And then, and we'll get to the Biden response here in just a second, but this post has been shared also from that interview, and it's Joe Rogan. He's talking about a lot of the national media, the CNNs, the MSNBCs, even a lot of the people on Fox News who were keeping up this, you know, charade for years during COVID about how misinformation is the true enemy, and that if you want to know what's really happening, you must listen to us. And then we see lie after lie after lie, and the Biden cover-up, and this and that. Now they want to come back with Trump in charge and say, yeah, can you believe all those people back then that were lying to your face and telling you things were good when they really weren't? I can't believe that. And we're looking at the TV going, that's you.
Yeah.
You were doing that.
Yeah.
You're the one, and now you want us to, and we've seen it work with like Brian Williams and some of these people who have been, you know, basically kicked out of their career for lying.
Well, Brian Williams was simply like, he was telling a story on Letterman and he was going too far. Mm-hmm. You know, he was trying to make the story more dramatic than it was and put him in it. It was just storytelling. That wasn't even the violations that we had with the news agencies in our time in the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
That wasn't just storytelling about, and then we got shot at and whatever. It's twisted everything around.
And then if they are unfortunate enough to be kicked out of their profession, they've lied on that grand of enough scale, they find a way to weasel back in, right? And then you're just expected to trust them. And that's what Rogan is talking about here, but it really feels more like a message directed at Zuckerberg, who just spent 2 hours listening to play kind of the victim.
And so when you showed me the video of that, it's almost like, and when you play it, you'll hear it. There's this silence. It's almost like Zuckerberg doesn't get what Rogan's saying, because Rogan is kind of directing his question at Zuckerberg himself, correct?
Right. And Zuckerberg just awkwardly looks at him. You'll hear the awkwardness here. And I think it's because he didn't really have a good answer. Rogan's wanting him to say, are you doing what I'm describing right now? Listen to this.
You have to actually be interested in what you're talking about. That's another thing that they are at a huge disadvantage of in mainstream media, is like they're just doing that because that's their job. You know, they probably don't even know a lot about climate change. They probably don't really understand too much about what SpaceX is trying to accomplish, but they're just reporting on it.
Yeah, you know? I mean, I'm sure a lot of the people I've met there, I think, are good people.
I'm sure
it's just
are.
A tough format.
It's a terrible format. Yeah, and the problem is they get locked into that format and no one trusts them. And then they leave and they go, yeah, but you were just lying to us about this, that, and the other thing. And now I'm supposed to believe you're one of the good guys. You're one of the straight shooters now.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Rogan kind of laughing to cut the awkwardness, but less than that, he's like, he, laying down the gauntlet.
He was saying to him, now I'm supposed to trust you.
Mm-hmm.
Zuckerberg, now you're one of the good guys. Now you're a straight shooter. That, and Zuckerberg, I don't know if he didn't realize it was directly at him.
Yeah.
Or what, like you say, he simply didn't have the right answer.
Yeah, and there's so many games at play for these guys. And we're talking about the richest people in the world. But you look at what they want from a Trump administration and why they're acting the way they are now. First off, they don't want him to come back at them for what they've done over the last 6 or 7 years.
True.
To put roadblocks in his way.
Well, you know, but his DOJ might act with a little burr in their side.
But they also want him to put pressure on Europe and some of these other places around the world that are putting pressure on them. And they want, you know, with Apple, for instance, how much of their business is sourced from China and the different parts that go into the iPhones. And then you have wars between those companies. Zuckerberg spent a big part of that conversation going after Apple because he said all they do now, they don't create new things. They just sell your app in the App Store and take a ridiculous cut from it.
Mm-hmm.
And that they're kind of coming after all these other big tech giants. So it's it'll be fascinating to watch how the Zuckerbergs and Bezoses and Musks treat this Trump administration because, well, he has a lot of leverage over them as well.
And wasn't Musk turning and becoming part of the Trump team a big part of a lot of the tech companies coming around to Trump? I mean, didn't that was some sort of a signal like...
Yeah, well, they didn't come around very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
They waited, obviously,
until
it looked like Trump was going to be president-elect.
True.
But it is kind of like when Senator Sessions first gave Trump that endorsement, it gave other senators and politicians the go-ahead.
The clear, yeah.
Maybe there's a similarity there.
8:51, Dan and Dalton. We'll go to the text line on the way back.
Underdog Fantasy, the best place to cash in on all your takes during the playoffs. Which players are going to go off? Which ones are ice cold? It's up to you to decide. And if you decide right, you're going to win some money. With the Underdog Fantasy Champions game, you could win up to 1,000 times your money just by choosing higher or lower on player stats. And Underdog, the only Champions platform that puts the power to cash out in your hands. Now you can either keep riding with your entry or tap the Win Now button and cash out whenever you want. Plus, with Underdog's double flex option, you can even take two L's and turn them into a W. And there's plenty of sports going on while we wait for next Monday night's college football national championship game. More NFL tonight with the wild card game going on, and they've got that up on Underdog Fantasy as well. So you can mix and match sports or just pick some entries for your football entry. Either way, you'll be good to go on Underdog Fantasy, the best place to play champions. To get started, download the app. It's called Underdog Fantasy. Sign up with the promo code Dalton, D-A-L-T-O-N. Deposit now to get up to $1,000 in bonus cash instantly. Underdog Fantasy is the app. It's promo code Dalton, and you have to be 19-plus in Alabama and present in a state where Underdog operates. Terms apply. If you're concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit ncpgambling.org.
How about Jaden Daniels last night? Rookie quarterback, LSU gets was it an overtime win? Another 123-20.
Run in regulation. Full
last
goal
second
at the
kick.
End. Beating Baker Mayfield and the Tampa Bay Bucks. First time since 06 Washington has won a playoff game, and that also was over the Bucks.
2006, was it?
Right? That's right.
Okay. And it was a doinker too. It hit the upright and happened to bounce across.
Yeah, there's some and for the college football playoff, I mean, they needed those two games to be good because the rest we've seen some lopsided results. Finally, got two really good games. Even that Ohio State game, while it looks like they doubled them in points, you had Texas looking to score and tie it up there at the very end.
Yeah, we got the Jeff Poole Show on the way. State Rep Rex Reynolds, also radio host Dale Jackson, and columnist Paul DeMarco, all part of Jeff's show, coming up in just a few minutes.
Looking at the text line, Avit texted in and said, I think rather than bollards, we should name them more appropriately the Pillars of Islam. See, good one there. See what you did. Art said ballard, not a new word. It's the same as the parking post that I'm looking at in front of the Waffle House, and ballard can be used for the same thing. In fact, the way these posts are used... yeah, so I guess I've always just called them, well, I don't know what I've called them. They've just been there, right? Tusker says, Zuck is a snake. Another texter, Zuckerberg wouldn't have changed a thing if Trump had lost the election. This texter says, it's all fine and great, but don't forget he donated $450 million to the campaign of Joe Biden. Gardner asking, is Facebook concerned about the repeal of Section 230 that grants broad legal protections to websites that host user-generated content like Facebook and Google. You know, I would love to see the amount of money spent on lobbying efforts by just Facebook, Google, and Twitter alone on making sure that they remain basically safe from those kinds of lawsuits. I'm sure that's a major role in why they're doing what they're doing now. And this texter, I don't believe Fox News hosts believe everything they say. I don't believe MSNBC hosts believe everything they say. It is a money machine. And
it not much of a money machine for MSNBC or CNN these days, because they're kind of running on fumes in terms of a lot of those ad sales. Well, the ratings.
Ratings are way down.
Ad sales may still be there because of some sort of ideology. 859 FM Talk 106.5 and the Jeff Poor Show is next.